Hello, I'm Chris Baisden, an editor with AICPA's Journal of Accountancy. You're listening to the JFA podcast, where we talk about the key issues facing the accounting profession. Today on the podcast, I'm going to be talking about business valuation with CPA Mark Zala. But before we get started, please take a few seconds to listen to a short message from our sponsor.
Did you know 75% of people now prefer to pay by credit or debit? With CPA Charge, you can let your clients pay their bill online and you'll get the reporting details you need for easy reconciliation. AICPA members can sign up at cpacharge.com/podcast and get your program fee waived for 6 months.
Welcome back. As it happens, I'm taping today's podcast the week of Valentine's Day. And with that in mind, possibly because I have an odd sense of humor, I thought it would be fun to talk about prenups and divorce. But all you hopeless romantics shouldn't get upset, because we're going to be talking about business relationships, not personal ones. My guest today is Mark Zala, a CPA ABV who is the managing director of Acuitas, Inc., an Atlanta-based valuation and litigation consultancy. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. So, you know, I think anyone who has gone into business with a partner knows that business relationships are often a little bit like work marriages. So what valuation matters are key to keep in mind when considering prospective business partners?
Sure, they are. And keep in mind, these business relationships can take a number of forms, first of all. They could be a simple partnership. For example, if you and I decide to enter into some sort of a partnership just between the two of us and own a business. And it could range from that to, say, a company with multiple shareholders, or it could be even a joint venture between companies. But the concepts that we're going to talk about today, each of the concepts apply to each of those types of entities. And they are a lot like relationships and marriages. So when one of the key items when thinking about entering into a prospective partnership, it's prudent to think of a potential exit. Think of it when you're structuring the partnership agreement or the shareholder agreement. Think of it as including terms that are similar to a business prenup, so that if something goes wrong, or in the inevitable event one of the partners or shareholders decides to leave, there's a plan in place to consider that. So some of the valuation issues that one should consider when entering in a business relationship or these agreements are, first of all, the rights and obligations of each business partner. And are those rights and obligations reflected in the equity interest and the relative shareholder percentages to each of the partners? One of the factors that we see often is that everyone's happy at the very beginning of the relationship. One partner, they set up a business arrangement where one partner has effective control over the other partners. And if things deteriorate over time, that has heavily involved in the eventual valuation of the business. So some concepts about who should have control or if anybody has control in developing the shareholder agreement or partnership agreement, those are some factors that should be considered. Also related to that, do the initial shareholders or partners contemplate discounts for lack of marketability and lack of control for minority shareholders? Some partners agree that everyone should coexist on an equal basis, even if one has effective control. Others, shareholder agreements contemplate discounts, and if they do, they should be clearly spelled out in the agreement. As far as exiting and planning for a potential exit if things don't go according to plan, the agreement should include a mechanism for the valuation of the interest, and they range pretty wide varieties. They may be a valuation formula for certain businesses, or it may be including a certain valuation firm or firms by the shareholders to determine a value. Also, what should also be considered with the parties often don't consider is if a shareholder or a party wants to withdraw and there's a mechanism for that in place with a valuation mechanism, oftentimes it's expensive. And so there should be a provision for how the exit should be financed if one partner wants to buy out another partner. In other words, should be paid immediately or should be paid over time and at what interest rate. So that should be contemplated upfront as well. And then other issues that shareholders or partners should think about is what happens when there's a change in the lifestyle of one of the partners or one of the shareholders. For example, if there's a death or an actual marital divorce. And each of those, of course, would impact the entity. So there should be some definitions, consideration of what happens in eventuality of those lifestyle changes. And then just a couple of other things that the agreement should consider is the tax structure of the organization. Should it be a pass-through entity or a C corporation? Because that obviously would have an impact on value. And then one thing that we noticed over the years that when something goes wrong, that sometimes the original agreements, when we're asked to do a valuation, don't have a definition of value, or they just use the term value in the agreement. So the original agreement should have a clear definition of value, whether it's fair market value, fair value, to memorialize what the partners or the shareholders agree. And then lastly, it's really a good practice to retain an experienced attorney to help the shareholders put this together so that the parties can understand the impact of the jurisdiction where the business is eventually incorporated.
So that's a lot of good information. You know, I'm wondering, I haven't had this experience because I don't have a prenup with my wife, but I know that sometimes when people talk about prenups with potential spouses, that it can be a tricky conversation. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult when you're doing that with a potential business partner, or does it tend to go a little bit smoother?
I think with advisors, it's helpful to have outside advisors explain why it's prudent. You know, similar to a marriage, you know, you're everybody's happy and excited about entering to the new adventure at the very beginning. And sometimes some of these conversations can be difficult at times. But if you're looking to maintain value, if you're looking to make a process in place in case it doesn't work out, you really need to have serious conversations about those issues.
Absolutely. So what factors improve or detract from a healthy business relationship, and what is the impact on the business's valuation?
Sure. Just like a marriage, the partners have to anticipate that there's going to be issues inevitably that they may not agree. And in those situations, effective communication, just like in a marriage, is key to resolving those issues. But the best that in order to maintain value or valuation is to anticipate when there is a disagreement, what's the process to handle that disagreement. Also anticipate that there may be issues in partners or shareholders' lives that may impact their involvement in the business. And if that occurs, there may be a need for a withdrawal. So you need to define clearly at the very beginning and have a conversation beginning how those type of issues would be resolved. So for example, with certain decisions about the business, do they need to be unanimous among all the shareholders or among the partners? For example, if there's buying or selling of certain assets or thinking of eventually selling the company or making an acquisition, you know, perhaps those major decisions need to be unanimous and need to be memorialized in the agreement. There are maybe other decisions, just more operational decisions, that are left to either the controlling shareholder or controlling partner, or if there's one of the partners or is designated as the manager of the decision. But again, it needs to be clearly defined. If there's equal ownership, if, for example, it's a 50-50 partnership as opposed to a shareholder or joint venture, then perhaps there needs to be a mechanism outlined if the partners disagree so that there's not a stalemate in the business, that the business continue to run and operate while that particular issue is being resolved. And it may involve things like an arbitrator or a third party that's designated to be the tiebreaker, even though they're not a shareholder or involved in the business. And so if there's not a defined plan in place, in making decisions where partners disagree, then inevitably the operations of the business are impacted. If the operations of the business are impacted, then the business's valuation tends to deteriorate. So anything that the partners can do and outline in advance to while decisions are being made to continue the business operations and not have interruptions, the better for the overall valuation of the entity.
I see. So I'm guessing that if you work in a business that you own, you probably have a tendency to maybe overvalue what it might be worth. What variables, though, drive the value of a company that someone like you would look at, and how can the owners maximize the business's potential worth?
Sure. There's a couple of variables that impact the valuation of a business. The first is obviously cash flow. The higher the level of cash flow the business generates, generally, the higher the valuation. A second variable is risk. The lower the risk of the business, the lower the risk of actually receiving the cash flow, the higher the valuation. And then lastly, the final variable that may impact an overall valuation is just the growth of the business. That if the business operations continue to grow and their cash flow continues to grow, risk is lowered, then you tend to see an overall higher valuation. So if owners can incorporate these mechanisms in place, that even if there are disagreements or there's a withdrawal, even if it's a friendly withdrawal from the business relationship, if they can anticipate that and maintain the operations of the business by enhancing cash flow, lowering risk, maintaining growth, then the business valuation will be higher and it won't deteriorate while the partnership, one of the partners or shareholders withdraw. Also, the parties need to recognize, they often don't think about that the business entity often develops or has contributed to it intellectual property in the business entity. And the parties need to understand the value of that intellectual property or other intangible assets. And so some examples might be technology or trade name, customer relationships, or similar assets. So the original agreement needs to have a mechanism placed to identify these assets. And if they are assets of the entity, how are those assets maintained during a period where one or more shareholders or partners want to withdraw the from the business? And then lastly, the partners don't sometimes forget about the financial information that is developed by the business or reflects the business. The greater the integrity of the financial information likely increases the value. And what I mean by that is the more confidence all the parties have in the financial information, the better it is across the board. And it relates to the risk of the enterprise. So that the lower the risk, the overall valuation. So the owners or the partners should think about perhaps retaining outside accounting help, an outside auditing firm, to perhaps verify the integrity of the financial information. And we found that that's very helpful in a exit from a business.
Yeah, I would think so. Just out of curiosity, was that right? In your experience, do owners tend to overvalue their business, or am I wrong about that?
They do. Owners tend to think about things that they're contributing that perhaps have greater value in their mind. But again, it relates to one of those three variables. Is it enhanced cash flow? Does it reduce risk? Or does it help increase or maintain growth? If it does, then they're correct. Yeah, it adds value. They maybe add value. If it doesn't, if there's not a direct relationship to one or more of those variables, then perhaps it doesn't.
Anything jump out at you as something they often latch onto that you have to explain to them, no, that doesn't really help increase the value?
Yeah, you know, sometimes they think about their past experiences, and mm-hmm. that may be helpful. But it may not. It may not be directly applicable. But they think about, you know, that they've done something similar in the past, and somehow that may enhance the value of the business. And it may. There may be circumstances when it does. But if it doesn't impact one of those three variables that I mentioned previously, then perhaps they're thinking about it, they're overestimating the value of that contribution.
Gotcha. So how can owners strategize their exit? What valuation methodologies are typical when negotiating a shareholder agreement or exit?
Yeah, there's a wide variety of valuation methodologies that we've seen that are incorporated in various shareholder agreements. And each of these methodologies have their advantages and disadvantages. Common ones can be grouped into multiples. So there might be incorporating an agreement that if one of the parties exits, that it's a multiple of earnings. For example, 5x EBITDA or earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, or some similar type multiple. Or it might be a multiple of book value, 2x book value. The advantage of that is that it's simple and one can calculate that just mathematically, typically. The disadvantage is when it's incorporated and contemplated, perhaps that's appropriate, but as time goes on, market conditions change, industry conditions change, the size of the business change, the risk changes. Perhaps those types of multiples are not appropriate in the future, so it becomes a disadvantage. Other methodologies might be just, there might be incorporated in the agreement that the company itself hires a valuation expert. And they may even put the firm's name in an agreement. So the parties agree to who's going to do the valuation. So there's no dispute about that selection process. Or there may be a process where both parties select their own valuation expert, and then they average them or have some sort of mechanism to incorporate the differences between the valuations between the two experts. And then we've seen situations where incorporating an agreement, each party retains their own experts, and then the two experts agree on a third expert, and there's some formula in place between all three of those valuations. Clearly the disadvantage in that is it's time consuming and expensive to have three valuation experts. They may not agree on the third expert and so on. So there's some challenges with that.
So when is a third party appraisal required, and should companies have a set formula for valuation, or should they pay for an expert when one owner wants to sell?
Yeah, that's a great question. The advantages of a formula would be, like most valuation issues are based on facts and circumstances. If the business is in a mature industry with limited growth and stable cash flow, and then perhaps there's a number of transactions of similar businesses within industry, then perhaps a formula or multiple might be appropriate if both parties agree and understand that particular multiple and agree to its use and understand that it may change over time or there may be some other factors involved. Otherwise, it's probably better to hire an outside expert. Particularly if there's variability in cash flows and growth and the business grows and changes over time. And then it becomes to the point whether the parties feel that the company hires just one expert and they either negotiate off that valuation or whatever the valuation expert comes up with, that's the value. Or it could be, as I mentioned previously, both parties retain valuation experts or go through a third process. And again, each of those has their advantages and disadvantages.
What are the common frameworks for winding down the business partnership, or at least from a valuation perspective?
Sure. The first thing is, and again, probably is if you're considering winding down, is probably consult with a legal counsel, either the company's outside counsel or if they have an internal counsel about the operating agreement, existing shareholder agreement, and if there's an existing process in place so that the parties understand the issue that they're facing with a valuation and the process of winding down a business or a withdrawal from one of the partners. Again, it's also helpful to make sure that the financial information historically has been transparent and correctly prepared according to any shareholder agreements. And again, perhaps it's useful to have an outside accounting firm help with the preparation of that financial information so that both parties feel confident in that information. It's best, of course, when the parties agree to many or most of the factors, so that's important that they have a basic understanding up front prior to the valuation that they agree that on the financial information, if they can agree on the prospects of the company, the outlook of the economy and industry, and it's just a matter of putting those assumptions into a valuation. The more the parties agree and understand up front and cooperate up front, the easier it is for the valuation and that the understanding of the assumptions that go into valuation. And then lastly, Hopefully, in the initial agreement, there's a clearly defined mechanism, the agreement as to the valuation of financing process, clearly defined definition of value and what's expected, whether or not discounts would be considered, and so on. So all of it's hopefully outlined in the initial agreement.
What are advantageous methods to maintain the company's value during dissolution?
You know, some of the things that, that parties generally don't think about when they're negotiating is one, limit the limit the disruptions to the operating business itself, so that the business hopefully continues to run as before the negotiations take place, so that there's limited disruptions. You know, the less disruptions, the less impact it has on cash flow, less impact on risk, has a lesser impact on the valuation and maintains the value. Other things to think about are if there's intellectual property or in other intangible assets, such as the customer relationships, trade secrets, trade names, if the entity owns those intangible assets, you know, both parties would be helpful. Both parties agree to protect that inside the entity, and that would help maintain its value. When, you know, sometimes when there is a withdrawal of a partner for various reasons, you know, that shareholder, that partner may believe that certain intellectual property is theirs individually rather than the entities. And if something like that happens, that's when you start seeing disruptions in the operating business, and you start seeing impacts on valuations. And that's when things tend to get messy. And again, you know, it's a good practice to have an experienced attorney in these types of situations, in addition to a valuation expert involved in the process to have it operate as smoothly as possible.
If the relationship does sour and the owners cannot resolve their differences, how can the parties determine the best course of action for valuation purposes?
Well, the first thing is clearly upfront planning is extremely helpful. So hopefully they've gone through the process and thought about these things upfront and have a clear process in place. Secondly, the parties have to have the interest of the entity foremost in mind, not their individual interest. And I know that's difficult to do and it's easy to say, but in order to maintain value, the less disruption there is on the overall operations of the business as the parties go through this process, the easier it is to maintain its value through, you know, its cash flows and growth and risk. You know, consider impact on customer relationships, who maintain the rights of the intellectual property within the entity. Find common areas of agreement so that it's, you know, hopefully just boils down to just a couple of issues that could be easily resolved with the help of outside experts, perhaps, which would be key advisors, legal counsel, valuation specialist, perhaps accounting specialist. One of the things that we see when we've gotten involved in some of these situations where there's not a clear definition of value, that even just a simple concept of what is meant by value, how much is my interest worth, may have a major impact on how the parties view the interest under consideration. One party, for example, may view it as fair market value, as a standard definition in tax. Another party may think of it as just a percentage of the entire business enterprise. So the more the parties can agree on definitions of value and the concepts in a definition of value, the better. That's a good starting point, because if they don't agree on that basic definition up front, then it gets even more difficult to find some common ground for an agreement with the valuations. And then, you know, a couple of things too is if it's contemplated to have an outside valuation expert, that the parties, you know, agree, is that the number, or is it a starting point for negotiations? And I found that in these situations, the more the parties use the outside valuation expert as a consultant. So they may the valuation expert may provide a number, a result, a value, but also to provide advice on these are the value drivers, these are the assumptions, getting an agreement and consensus, hopefully, among the parties. The easier it is for them to negotiate an appropriate value for the exiting shareholder or partner's interest. And because there may be a lot of issues that are involved in the reason for the withdrawal that a valuation expert, you know, traditionally just wouldn't take into consideration because it doesn't have a direct impact, but it may have an impact on the partners and partnership, and they may have, you know, thoughts and agreements just based on their relationship. So if the valuation is used as a starting point negotiation and the valuation expert is used as a consultant, in my experience, I've found that those situations, it's more beneficial to the parties as a whole.
So we've talked a lot about some best practices here to maintain value, but I'm wondering, do you have any horror stories here at the end that you could share where, you know, people didn't follow the best practices and you really saw an impact on the valuation?
Yeah. I mean, there's been a number of these. One is actually something that the parties were prudent up front. And so this is more of a, you know, they went through this process and did a kind of a business prenup. And this is an example of a joint venture where it was two large corporations that formed a joint venture, and one party contributed intellectual property and the other party contributed some employees and some cash and had some customer relationships for the technology. And we were retained at the very beginning to value each of those particular assets that were being contributed to the joint venture and then value the joint venture as a whole so that the parties understood which each was contributing as far as the intellectual property and its overall impact on the joint venture, so that they could understand whether or not the percentage interest in a joint venture was fair and reasonable, and if it didn't tie to the overall valuations of those particular assets that were contributed, then they knew that up front. And the experience was very beneficial in just establishing that particular joint venture. And they were smart. They had an exit in mind and they utilized all of that data to help them structure their exit. On the flip side, we've been involved in a number of situations where shareholders that help start companies for whatever reason, that shareholder was also an employee, something happened, the employee was let go, they still had an equity interest, and there was an ill-defined shareholder agreement as far as to value, whether, you know, even definition of value or whether it was meant that it was if fair market value, whether discounts were appropriate and things like that. And the ensuing litigation centered around just establishing these very basic valuation concepts even before we could get to the valuations itself. So we've seen both sides of the story on these agreements.
Thanks, Mark. And I'd also like to thank our audience for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, check out more JFA podcasts on our website and on Podomatic.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.